What about him, Lord High? I asked, pointing at Claw with the arm that still worked. Doesn't he get a chance to practice? Kellen gazed at me with a thin smile. Behind his eyes, I could see the empty sockets of his skull.
You will be his practice, kiddie. He survived Lake Remla, and he'll survive you. Look at the size of him. Nah. When it's the second round, you'll not be taking part, my insolent friend. And I, for one, will be glad to be rid of you.
With those comforting words, he left. 4. It was steak for dinner that night. It almost always was after playtime. Percy rolled his cart up the corridor, tossing the half-cooked meat into our cells. 16 cells, each now occupied by 2 prisoners. Percy once more raised his malformed hand to his brow as he tossed me mine. It was a quick and furtive gesture, but there was no mistaking it. Claw caught his chunk on the fly and sat in the corner, holding the half-raw meat in his hands and snaffling it down in big, tearing bites. What big teeth you have, Claw, I thought. Hamie ate a few token bites of his, then tried to give it to me. I wouldn't take it.
You can manage more than that.
For what reason? He asked. Why eat, suffer the cramps, then die anyway?
I fell back on my father's acquired wisdom. One day at a time. As if there were days in Moline. But he ate a few more bites to please me. I was the promised prince, after all, the fabled PP. Although the only magic in me had to do with mysterious changes in hair and eye color, and that was magic I had no control over and no use for. I asked Claw about his near drowning. Claw did not reply. Fremy and Stooks wanted to know where he'd come from and where he had been going. Was there a safe haven somewhere? Claw did not reply. Gully wanted to know how long he'd been on the dodge. Claw did not reply. He ate his meat and wiped greasy fingers on his striped shirt.
Don't talk much without the Lord High in front of you, do you?
Double asked. He was standing at the bars of the cell he shared with Burned, a few down from mine. He was holding his last bit of steak, which I knew he would save for later if he woke up in the night. The routines of prison are sad but simple. Claw replied from his corner without getting up or looking up.
Why would I talk to those who will soon be dead? I understand there's to be a contest. Very well. I'll win it. If there's a prize, I'll take it and be on my way.
We greeted this in thunderstruck silence. Finally, Fremy said,
He don't understand.
Got bad information, Stook said. Or maybe there was still water in his ears and he didn't hear so good.
Iota dipped from their bucket, drank, then jumped up on the bars of the cell that had been a single until today, stretching his muscles and shaking the bars, as was his wont. Then let go and turned to face the oversized galoot, hunkered in the corner.
Let me explain something to you, Claw, he said. Clarify, as it said. The Fair One is a tournament. Such tourneys were often held on the Field of the Monarchs during the days of the Galleons, and people came in their thousands to watch. From everywhere they came, even giant fellows from Cratchy, 'tis said. The contestants were usually members of the King's Guard, although ordinary folk could participate if they wanted to test the hardness of their skulls. There was blood, and combatants were often carried unconscious from the field. But this is to be the old version, from long before the Galleons, when Lilimar was only a village not much bigger than Deesk.
I knew some of this, but even after long days and weeks, not all. I listened intently. So did the rest, because we in Durance Vile rarely discussed the Fair One. It was a taboo subject, as I imagine the electric chair was in the old days, and lethal injection is now.
16 of us will fight the other 16. To the death. No quarter, no crying off. Anyone who refuses to fight will find himself or herself on the rack, or in the maiden, or pulled like taffy candy on the strapado. Do you understand?
Kla sat in his corner, seeming to consider. At last he said,
I can fight.
I nodded.
Yes, you look like you can when you're not facing the Lord High or spitting up lake water. The 16 fight again, leaving 8. The 8 fight again, leaving 4. 4 becomes 2.
Claw nodded.
I'll be one of those. And when the other man lies dead at my feet, I'll claim my prize.
Yes, you will,
Hamey said. He had come to stand beside me.
In the old days, the prize was a bag of gold and, 'tis said, a life's freedom from the king's levy. But that was the old days. Your prize will be to fight Red Molly. She's a giant and too big for the special box where flight killers' lickspittles sit, but I've seen her many times standing below it. You're big, almost 7 feet, I judge, but the red bitch is bigger.
She not catch me, Dash said. She slow, I fast. They ain't called me Dash for no reason.
No one said the obvious. Fast or not, scrawny Dash would be long gone before anyone had to face Red Molly. Kla sat, thinking this over. At last he got up, big knees cracking like knots in a fire, and approached the drinking bucket. He said,
I'll beat her too. Hit her until her brains come out of her mouth.
Let's say you do, I said. He turned to me.
You still won't be done. Kill the daughter, you probably won't, but say you do, and you won't stand a chance against the mother. I've seen her. She's fucking Godzilla.
That wasn't, of course, the word that came out of my mouth, but whatever I said, there were murmurs of agreement from the other cells.
You've all been beaten down until you're scared of your own shadows,
Kla said, perhaps forgetting that when Kellen had told Kla to address him as Lord High, he had done so at once. Of course, Kellen and the rest of the night soldiers were different. They had those auras. I thought of how my muscles had locked up when Kellen touched me. Kla picked up the bucket of drinking water. Iota seized his slab of an arm.
Nah, use the cup, dummy. Percy won't bring the water cart again until...
I never saw a man as big as Kla move so fast. Not even in ESPN classic highlights of Shaquille O'Neal when he played college hoops for LSU. And even at 7 feet and 320 pounds, Shaq had had sublime moves. The bucket was at Claw's mouth and tilting. A second later, or so it seemed, it was clattering across the stone floor, the water spilling. Kla turned to look at it. I was on the cell floor, propped on one hand. The other was at his throat. His eyes bulged. He was gagging. Kla bent for the bucket and picked it up.
If you killed him, you'll pay a high price,
Yano said, then added with unmistakable relief,
There won't be no fair one.
There will be,
Hamey said dolefully.
Flight killer won't wait. Red Molly'll take I's place.
But I wasn't killed. He eventually got to his feet, staggered to his pallet, and lay down on it. For the next 2 days, he couldn't speak above a whisper. Until Kla came, he was the biggest of us, the strongest, the one you would have expected to still be standing when the blood sport known as the Fair One came to an end. Yet I had never even seen the throat punch that took him down. Who was supposed to stand against a man who could do that in the first round of the competition? According to Kellen, that honor would go to me. 5. I often dreamed of Radar, but on the night after Kla took Iota down, I dreamed of Princess Leia. She wore a red dress with an empire waist and a tightly fitted bodice. Peeping from beneath the hem were matching red shoes, their buckles encrusted with diamonds. Her hair was tied back with a complicated rope of pearls. She wore a golden locket in the shape of a butterfly on the swell of her bosom. I was sitting beside her, not dressed in the rags of the clothes I'd been wearing when I came to Empus with my sick and dying dog, but in a dark suit and a white shirt. The suit was velvet. The shirt was silk. On my feet were suede boots with folded tops, the sort of boots a Dumas musketeer might wear in a Howard Pyle illustration. From Dora's collection, no doubt. Falada was grazing contentedly nearby, while Leah's gray-skinned handmaid groomed her with a brush. Leah and I were holding hands and looking at our reflections in a still pool of water. My hair was long and golden. My few spots of acne were gone. I was handsome and Leah was beautiful. Especially so, because her mouth had returned. Her lips were curved in a small smile. There were dimples at the corners of her mouth, but no sign of a sore. Soon, if the dream held, I would kiss those red lips. Even in this dream, I recognized it for what it was, the final sequence of an animated Disney film. At any moment, a petal would fall into the pool, rippling the water and making our reflections waver as the lips of the reunited prince and princess met and the music soared. No darkness would be allowed to mar the perfect storybook ending. Only one thing was out of place. In the lap of her red dress, Princess Leah was holding a purple hairdryer. I knew it well, even though I'd only been 7 when my mother died. All of her useful things, including that, had gone to the Goodwill store, because my father said every time he looked at what he called her woman stuff, his heart broke again. I had no problem with him giving most of it away, only asked if I could keep her pine sachet and her hand mirror. Dad had no problem with that, either. They were still on my dresser at home. Mom had called her hairdryer the purple ray gun of death. I opened my mouth to ask Leah why she had my mom's hairdryer, but before I could, her maid spoke.
"Help her."
"I don't know how," I said. Leah smiled with her new and perfect mouth. She stroked my cheek.
"You're faster than you think, Prince Charlie."
I started to tell her I wasn't fast at all, which was why I'd played on the line in football and first base in baseball. It was true I'd shown some speed in the Turkey Bowl game against Stanford, but that had been a short and adrenaline-fueled exception. Before I could say anything, though, something hit me in the face and I jerked awake. It was another piece of steak, a small one, hardly more than a scrap. Percy shuffled down the corridor, tossing a few more small pieces into other cells, saying,
"Leftovers. Leftovers."
Which I assumed was the best he could do with leftovers. Hamie was snoring away, exhausted by playtime and his usual post-dinner struggle to empty his bowels. I took my little bit of steak, sat with my back against the cell wall, and bit into it. Something crackled under my front teeth. I looked and saw a piece of paper, hardly bigger than a fortune cookie fortune, tucked into a slice in the meat. I took it out. Written in neat and tiny cursive, the handwriting of an educated man, was this:
"I will help you if I can, my prince. There is a way out of here from the official's room. It is dangerous. Destroy this if you value my life. Yours in service, Percival."
Percival, I thought. Not Percy, but Percival. Not a gray slavey, but a real man with a real name. I ate the paper. 6. The next day we had sausages for breakfast. We all knew what that meant. Haimi looked at me with desolate eyes and a smile.
At least I'm done with the belly cramps. No more straining into shit, either. Do you want these?
I didn't, but took his four links, hoping they'd give me a little extra energy. They sat in my stomach like lead. From the cell on the other side of the corridor, Claw was looking at me. No, that's wrong. He was eye-fucking me. Iota gave me a shrug that said, "What are you gonna do?" I gave it back to him. What indeed? There was waiting. We had no way to keep time, but it slowed anyway. Fremy and Stuke sat side by side in their cell. Fremy said,
"As long as they don't put us against each other, old pal, that's all."
I thought they probably would, because it was cruel. That, at least, turned out to be wrong. Just when I began to believe it wouldn't be today after all, four night soldiers appeared, Aaron in charge. He was always on the field during playtime, waving his limber stick like a conductor's baton. But this was the first time he'd come to Deep Malene since taking me to see the Lord High, and to check out the torture chamber, of course. The cell doors rattled open on their rusty tracks.
"Out! Out, kiddies! A good day for half of you, a bad one for the rest."
We stepped out of the cells, all but a slight, balding man named Hatcha.
"I don't want to," he said. "I'm sick."
One of the night soldiers approached him, but Aaron waved him off. He stood in the door of the cell Hatcha shared with a much bigger man named Quilly, who hailed from Deesk. Quilly shrank back, but Aaron's aura brushed him. Quilly gave a soft cry and clutched his arm.
"You are Hatcha, of what was once called the Citadel. Is that right?"
Hatcha nodded miserably.
"And you feel ill. The sausages, perhaps?"
"Maybe,"
Hatcha said, not looking up from the trembling knot of his hands.
"Probably."
"Yet I see you ate all but the strings."
Hatcha said nothing.
"Listen to me, kiddie. It's the Fair One or the Maiden. I'd see to your time visiting that lady myself, and it would be long time. I'd close the door slow. You'd feel the spikes touch your eyelids. Just gentle, you know, before they punched through. And your stomach, not as soft as your eyes, but soft enough. What's left of those sausages will come dribbling out while you scream. Now, does that sound like a treat?"
Hatcha groaned and stumbled from the cell.
"Excellent. And here we all are,"
Aaron cried.
"Off to the games we go. Hump, kiddies. Hump, hump, hump. Such fun awaits."
We humped. As we made the climb we'd made many times before, but never until then knowing only half of us would come back, I thought of my dream. Of Leah saying,
"You're faster than you think, Prince Charlie."
I didn't feel fast. 7. Instead of going directly to the field, we were marched into the team room we'd been using after practices. Only this time, the Lord High was there, resplendent in a full dress uniform which looked blue-black inside his aura. He was fully charged up for the occasion. I wondered where the energy that powered those auras came from, but such questions weren't much of a priority that day. On the shelf, where there had been 31 buckets for washing after playtime, there were now just 16, because only 16 would need to clean up after the day's festivities. In front of the shelf, propped on an easel, was a large poster board with "Fair One First Round" printed at the top. Below it were the matchings. I remember them perfectly. I think in such a terrible situation, a person would either remember everything or nothing at all. I apologize for throwing out even more new names, but I must, if for no other reason than those with whom I was imprisoned deserve to be remembered, if only briefly.
Here you see the order of battle,
Kellen said.
I expect you all to put up a good show for His Majesty Eldon. Do you understand?
No one replied.
You may find yourself pitted against one you consider a friend, but friendship no longer matters. Each contest is to the death. To the death. Bringing your opponent low but not killing him will only earn both of you far more painful deaths. Do you understand?
It was Klaw who replied.
Yes.
He looked at me as he said it and drew a thumb across his enormous neck and smiled.
The first set comes soon. Be ready.
He left. The other night soldiers followed him. We examined the poster board in silence. Fair One, first round. First set. Fremy to Murph. Jaya to Hami. Amit to Whale. Second set. Yano to Freed. Jacka to Iota. Measle to Sam. Third set. Tom to Bolt. Dami to Kamet. Bendo to Dash. Noons. Fourth set. Double to Eva. Stooks to Hatcha. Pag to Quilly. Fifth set. Burned to Gully. Hilt to Akka. Eris to Viz. Sixth set. Klaw to Charlie. I had seen similar seedings, not just on TV during the NCAA Selection Sunday, but in person, when the matchups for the Arcadia Babe Ruth tournament were announced each spring on posters at every participating field. That was strange enough, but the most surreal element was that single word in the middle. Noons. Flight Killer and his retinue would watch 9 prisoners killed in battle, then enjoy a spot of lunch.
What would happen if we all refused?
Amit asked in a ruminative tone of voice I wouldn't have expected from a fellow who looked as if he once earned his bread and cheese shoeing horses, and knocking them flat if they didn't cooperate.
Just asking, mind you.
Akka, a big fellow with a nearsighted squint, laughed.
Do you mean a strike? Like the millers in my father's time? And deprive the Flight Killer of his day's entertainment? I think I'd rather live until tomorrow than spend this one screaming in agony, thank you very much.
And I thought Akka probably would live until tomorrow, considering he'd be fighting skinny little Hilt, who had a lame hip. Akka might go down in the second round, but if he won today, he would still be alive to wash up afterward and eat dinner tonight. I looked around and saw the same simple calculation on many faces. Not, however, on Hamie's. After one look at the board, he had gone to a bench and now sat there, head hanging. I hated to see him that way, but I hated the ones who had put us in this terrible position even more. I looked at the board again. I had expected to see Fremy against Stooks, and the two women, Jaya and Eris, against each other. A girl fight, what could be more amusing? But no. There didn't appear to have been any thought about the seedings. They might have been drawn out of a hat. Except for the last one, that was. Just the two of us, on the field. The day's finale. Klaw to Charlie. Chapter 24. First round. The last set. My prince. What do you think? 1. Jaya sat down next to Hami on the bench and took his hand. It lay limply in hers.
I don't want this. I know,
Hami said, without looking at her.
It's all right. Maybe you'll beat me. I'm not strong, you know, not like Eris. Maybe.
The door opened and two night soldiers came in. They looked as excited as living corpses can, their auras pulsing as if within them dead hearts were still beating.
First set, hump hump. Don't keep His Majesty waiting, kiddies. He's taken his place.
At first, none of them moved, and for a wild moment I almost believed Amit's strike was going to happen. Until I thought of the consequences for the strikers, that was. After looking at the board again to be sure some miracle hadn't changed the listings, the first half dozen got up. Fremi and Murph, Amit and a short tubby fellow named Whale, Hami and Jaya. She was holding his hand as they went out, shrinking to avoid the aura of the night soldier standing closest to her. In the days of Galleon rule, the rest of us would have heard the anticipatory cheers of a packed stadium as the combatants emerged. I strained my ears and thought I heard a faint spatter of applause, but it could have been my imagination. Probably was, because the stands of the Field of Eldin, formerly the Field of the Monarchs, were almost entirely empty. The boy I'd met on my journey here had been right. Lilimar was a haunted city, a place where only the dead, the living dead, and a few ass-kissers still remained. No butterflies here. If not for the night soldiers, escape might be possible, I thought. Then I remembered there were also a couple of female giants to consider, and Flight Killer himself. I didn't know what he was now, what transformation he might have undergone, but one thing seemed sure. He was no longer Leah's club-footed little brother, with a hump on his back or a lump on his neck. Time passed. Hard to tell how long. Several of us visited the pissing gutter, me included. Nothing brings on the need to piss like the fear of dying. At last, the door opened and Amit entered. He had a small cut across the back of his hairy left hand. Otherwise, he was unmarked. Meezel hurried to him as soon as Amit's undead escort stepped back.
What was it like? Is Whale really?
Amit pushed him so hard that Meezel went sprawling on the tiles.
I'm back and he's not. That's all I've got to say and all you need to hear. Leave me alone.
He went to the end of the bench, sat down, and put his hands to the sides of his bent head. It was a posture I'd seen many times on baseball fields, most often when a pitcher gave up a key hit and got pulled. It was the posture of a loser, not a winner. But of course, we would all be losers, unless something happened.
Save her,
Leah's gray maid had whispered to me. And was I now supposed to save them all? Just because my hair was blonde under repeated applications of dirt? It was absurd. Kla continued to eye-fuck me. He intended to still be around at dinner time.
Come the last death match of the day, I wouldn't even be able to save myself.
The next one to return was Murph. One of his eyes was swollen shut, and the right shoulder of his shirt was damp with blood. Stooks saw, understood that his comedy partner was no more, gave a soft cry and covered his eyes. We waited, watching the door. At last it opened and Jaya came in. She was as pale as window glass, but seemingly unmarked. Tears streamed down her cheeks.
I had to,
she said, not just to me, to all of us.
I had to, or they would have killed us both.
2. The second set was called. Yano to fight Doc Freed, Iota to fight Jacka, Meezel to fight Sam. When they were gone, I sat down next to Jaya. She wouldn't look at me, but the words spilled out of her, as if keeping them in would burst something inside her.
He couldn't really fight. You know how he is. How he was. But he put up a show of it. For me, I think. They were crying for blood. You'll hear it when your turn comes. Crying for him to put the bitch down. Crying for me to get behind him and stab him in the neck.
There are knives? I asked.
No, spears. With short handles. Also gloves with spikes on the knuckles. They're laid out on the table where the drinks were when we practiced. They want you in close, you know. They want to see as much stabbing and punching as they can before someone goes down. But I took one of the poles. You know, the...
She mimed a swing.
The fighting sticks. Yes. We went around and around. Fremy was dead, his throat cut. And Hamie almost slipped in the blood. Whale was lying on the track.
Yeah,
Amit said, without looking up.
Stupid git tried to run.
We were the last. That was when Aaron said 5 minutes more or we'd both be put down. He could see we weren't really trying. Hamie ran at me, waving his little spear off to one side, so stupid. And I hit him in the stomach with the butt of my stick. He screamed. He dropped the spear on the grass and kept screaming. Hamie's stomach, I thought, his endlessly sick stomach. I couldn't stand the sound. They were applauding and laughing and saying things like, good hit, and the kitty brought him low with that. And Hamie kept screaming. I picked up the spear. I never killed anybody, but I couldn't stand him screaming, so I...
You can stop there, I said. She looked at me, eyes full, cheeks wet.
You have to do something, Charlie. If you're the prince that was promised, you have to do something.
I could have told her that Prince Charlie's first job would be not getting killed by Claw, but I thought she felt badly enough without that, so I just gave her a brief hug.
Is he there? The flight killer?
She shuddered and nodded.
What does he look like?
I was thinking of that seat of honor, with the armrest slanting outward as if whoever it was meant for was extremely fat or at least extremely bulky.
Awful. Awful. His face is green, as if there's something wrong with him inside. Long white hair falling down his cheeks from under the crown he wears. His eyes are as big as soft-boiled eggs. It's a broad face, so wide it's hardly human. His lips are fat and red like he was eating strawberries. That was all of them I could see. He's swaddled in a huge purple robe from the chin down. But I could see it moving, like he was holding a pet underneath. He's awful. Monstrous. And he laughs. The others applauded when Hamie died, but he just laughed. Drool came out of his mouth on both sides. I saw it in the gas lights. There was a woman beside him, tall and beautiful with a little beauty mark beside her mouth.
Petra, I said. A man grabbed her by the boob and kissed her neck after I knocked Amit down.
She...
Jaya shuddered again.
She kissed him where his spit ran down. She licked it off his green face.
Iota came in, escorted by a night soldier. He saw me and gave a nod. So Jacka was gone. 3. When the door closed, I went over to Iota. He didn't have a mark on him.
The bitch is there, he said. Red Molly, watching from the track, below the box where the swells sit. Her hair ain't really red, but orange. The color of carrots. Sticks up all around her head in quills. 15 feet
from toes to top, wearing a leather skirt, tits like boulders, each of them must weigh as much as a 5-year-old kitty. Got a knife in a scabbard on her hip, looks almost as long as the little spears they give us to fight with. I think she watches to see what moves the winners make. For later, you know. That made me think of Coach Harkness and practices on Thursdays before Friday night games. On those afternoons, we knocked off 20 minutes early and sat in a team room less fancy than this one, but otherwise about the same. Coach would roll in a TV, and we'd watch our upcoming opponents, their moves and plays, especially the quarterback. He'd show us the enemy QB 20 or 30 times on isolated camera, every fake, jink, and stutter step. I told Uncle Bob about that once, and he laughed and nodded. "Coach is right, Charlie. Cut off your enemy's head, the body dies." "I didn't like her watching like that," I said. "I was hoping she'd take me for granted, and when we got down to it, maybe I could find a way to stick her or brain her. Instead, she's going to get 4 chances to watch how I do, and I ain't going to get a chance to see how she does at all." I didn't remark on his unspoken assumption that I'd be gone by then, promised prince or no promised prince. "Claw thinks it's going to be him." I laughed as if he hadn't just killed one of his longtime mates in Moline. "It'll be Claw against me when it's down to 2, no doubt. I've come to like you, Charlie, but I don't think you'll even put a touch on him. But I know his weakness."
"Which would be what?"
"He did me down that once. Poked me so hard in my throat, it's a damn wonder I can still talk. But I learned from it."
Which didn't answer the question.
Measle came in next, so Sam was finished. A few minutes later, the door opened again, and I was surprised to see Doc Freed come in, although not entirely under his own power. Percy was with him, one of his flipper hands hooked into Freed's armpit, helping him along. Doc's right thigh was bleeding heavily through a makeshift bandage, and his face was grotesquely battered. But he was alive, and Yano was not. I was sitting with Double and Eris.
"He won't be able to fight again," I said.
"Not unless the second round's 6 months from now, and maybe not even then."
"It won't be 6 months," Eris said. "It won't even be 6 days. And he'll fight, or he'll die."
It sure wasn't high school football.
4. Bolt and Bendo survived the third set. So did Kamet. He was cut in several places when he came back and said he'd been sure he was done for. Then poor Dami had one of his coughing fits, bad enough to double him over. Kamet saw his opportunity and ran his short spear into the back of Dami's neck. Doc was lying on the floor, either asleep, unlikely given his injuries, or passed out. While the rest of us were waiting for the third set to be over, Claw continued staring at me with that endless grin. The only time I could get away from it was when I went to one of the buckets to scoop out a handful of water. But when I turned back, there he was, eye-fucking me.
"I know his weakness," Iota had said. "He did me down that once, but I learned from it."
What had he learned? I replayed the fight, if you could call it that, in Eye's cell. The brilliant speed of Claw's rabbit punch to Eye's throat. The rolling bucket. Claw turning to see it. Yano, now the late Yano, saying, "If you killed him, you'll pay a high price." Eye picking himself up and going to his pallet while Claw bent to pick up the bucket. Maybe thinking to brain Eye with it if he tried again.
If there was something there, I didn't see it.
When the third set was done, Percy came in pushing a cart. Aaron accompanied him. There was the smell of roast chicken, which I would have found enticing under other circumstances, but not when it was apt to be my last meal.
"Eat hearty, kiddies," Aaron cried. You can't say we don't feed you well.
Most who'd won their battles for the day eagerly grabbed meat from the cart. Those who had yet to fight declined, with one exception. Claw grabbed a half chicken from Percy's cart and chomped into it, his eyes never leaving me. The blow, Iota on the stones of his cell, the rolling bucket, I crawls to his pallet, hand at his throat. Claw looks for the bucket, picks it up. What was there that Iota had seen and I was missing? The cart came to me. Aaron was watching Percy, so there was no salute. Then Doc Freed groaned, rolled on his side, and vomited across the floor. Aaron turned and pointed at Kamet and Bendo, sitting side by side on a nearby bench.
You and you, clean that mess up.
I took this momentary distraction to raise my hand with my thumb and finger pinched together. I wiggled my hand in a writing gesture. Percy gave a hardly perceptible shrug, maybe because he understood, or maybe to make me stop before Aaron saw. When Aaron turned back, I was selecting a drumstick from the rolling buffet and thinking that Percy's understanding or lack of it wouldn't matter if Claw killed me in the day's final match.
Last meal, kitty,
that jumbo gentleman said to me.
Enjoy it.
He's trying to psych me out, I thought. Of course, I'd already known that, but the actual words for what he was doing brought it into focus, made it concrete. Words have that power. And they open something inside me. A hole. Maybe even a well. It was the same thing that had opened during my nasty outings with Birdie Bird, and during my confrontations with Christopher Pauly and Peterkin the dwarf. If I was a prince, it certainly wasn't of the kind where the movie ended with the vapidly pretty blonde guy embracing the vapidly pretty girl. There was nothing pretty about my dirt-caked blonde hair, and my battle with Claw wouldn't be pretty either. It might be short, but it wouldn't be pretty. I thought, I don't want to be a Disney prince. To hell with that. If I have to be a prince, I want to be a dark one.
Stop looking at me, fuckface, I said.
His smile was replaced with a look of surprised puzzlement, and I realized why even before I threw my drumstick at him. It was because that word, fuckface, came from the well, came out in English, and he hadn't understood it. I missed him by a mile. The drumstick clanged on one of the buckets and fell to the floor, but he jerked in surprise anyway and turned toward the sound. Eris laughed. He swiveled toward her and got to his feet. The constant grin became a snarl.
Nah, nah, nah,
Aaron shouted.
Save it for the field, kitty, or I'll shock you so badly you won't be able to go out, and Charlie will be declared a winner by default. Flight Killer won't like that, and I'll make you like it less.
Disgruntled and fuming, clearly off his game for the moment, Claw resumed his seat, glowering at me. It was my turn to grin. It felt dark, and it felt good. I pointed at him.
I'm gonna fuck you up, honey.
Bold words. I might regret them, but when they came out, they felt just fine. 5. Sometime after noons, the fourth set was called. Again, there was the waiting, and one by one, they came back. Double first, then Stooks, Quilly last. Stooks was bleeding from a cheek so badly cut I could see the gleam of his teeth, but he was walking under his own power. Jaya gave him a towel to staunch the worst of the bleeding, and he sat on a bench near the buckets, the white towel quickly turning red. Freed was propped in the corner close by. Stooks asked if there was anything Doc could do for his slashed face. Freed shook his head without looking up. The idea that the wounded were supposed to fight another round, and soon, was crazy.
beyond sadistic, but I had no doubt it was true. Murph had killed one half of the comedy team. If he drew Stooks in the second round, Murph would put him down easily, stabbed shoulder or no stabbed shoulder. Claw was still looking at me, but the grin was gone. I thought his appraisal of me as an easy kill might have changed, which meant I couldn't count on him to be careless. "He'll move fast," I thought, the way he moved on I. In my dream, Leah had said, "You're faster than you think, Prince Charlie." Only I really wasn't. Unless, that was, I was able to find some hate-powered overdrive gear. The fifth set was called. Burned and Gully, Little Hilt and Big Akka, Eris and a short but muscular fellow named Viz. Before Eris left, Jaya embraced her.
Nah, none of that,
one of the night guards said in his unpleasant locust-like buzz.
Hump, hump.
Eris left last, but she was the first to return, bleeding from one ear, but otherwise unhurt. Jaya flew to her, and this time there was no one to stop their embrace. We'd been left alone. Akka came back next. For a long time after that, no one. Finally, Gully was carried in by a gray man, not Percy, and laid on the floor. He was unconscious, barely breathing. One side of his head looked caved in above the temple.
"I want him next," Bolt said. "I hope I get you next,"
Amit growled.
"Shut up."
More time passed. Gully stirred but didn't wake. I went to the piss trough. I needed to go, but couldn't. I sat back down, hands clasped between my knees, as I always did at baseball and football games before the national anthem was played. I didn't look up at Claw, but I could feel him looking at me, as if his stare had weight. The door opened. Two night soldiers flanked it. Aaron and the Lord High passed between them.
"Last match of the day,"
Aaron said.
"Claw and Charlie. Come on, kiddies, hump it."
Claw got up at once and walked past me, turning his head to give me one final grin as he did. I followed. Iota was looking at me. He raised one hand and gave me an odd salute, not to his forehead, but at the side of his face.
"I know his weakness."
As I passed the Lord High, Kellen said,
"I'll be glad to be rid of you, Charlie. If I hadn't needed 32, I would have done it already."
Two night soldiers ahead of us, Claw ahead of me, walking with his head slightly lowered and his hands swinging at his sides, already made into loose fists. Behind us walked the Lord High and Aaron, his lieutenant. My heart was beating slow and hard in my chest.
"He did me down that once, but I learned from it."
Up the corridor we walked, toward the brilliant rows of gaslight rimming the stadium. We passed the other team rooms. We passed the equipment room.
"The blow. Iota goes down. The bucket rolls. Iota crawls for his pallet. Claw turns to look for the bucket."
We passed the officials' room, from which there was a way out, at least according to Percy's note.
"I throw the drumstick, it hits a bucket, Claw turns to look. I started to get it then, and sped up a little as we came out of the corridor onto the dirt track surrounding the playing field.
I didn't draw even with Claw, but almost. He didn't look at me. His attention was on the center of the field, where the weapons were placed in a line. The rings and ropes were gone. Two leather gloves with stabbing spikes on the knuckles were on the table where there had been drinks during our practices. There were the fighting sticks in their wicker basket, and two short stabbing spears in another. Iota hadn't answered my question when I asked, but maybe when I was leaving, he did.
Maybe that odd salute he gave me wasn't a salute. Maybe it was a message. There was some applause as we followed the night soldiers toward the VIP box, but I barely heard it. Nor did I pay attention at first to the spectators flanking the box, or even to Eldon, Flight Killer. I was paying attention to Claw, who had turned to follow the rolling bucket on the floor of the cell he shared with Iota, and the drumstick I'd hucked at him in the team room. Claw, who didn't seem to realize I had pulled almost even with him. And why? I know his weakness, Iota had said, and now I thought I did too. I hadn't given me a salute. He'd mimicked the sort of blinker a horse might wear. Claw had either little peripheral vision or none at all. 6. We were led, no, herded, to the part of the track in front of the royal viewing box. I stood beside Claw, who didn't just shift his eyes to look at me, but turned his whole head. Immediately, Kellen whapped him across the back of the neck with his limber stick, drawing a thin line of blood.
Never mind looking at the make-believe prince, you great idiot. Pay heed to the real king instead.
So Kellen knew what the other prisoners believed. And was I surprised? Not much. Dirt could only conceal the striking change in the color of my hair for so long, and my eyes were no longer even hazel, they were gray going on blue. If Eldon hadn't insisted on the full complement of contestants, I would have been killed weeks ago.
Kneel,
Aaron shouted in his nasty buzz of a voice.
Kneel, you of the old blood. Kneel before the new blood. Kneel before your king.
Petra, tall, dark-haired, beauty mark beside her mouth, green silk dress, complexion as white as cottage cheese, shouted,
Kneel, old blood! Kneel, old blood!
The others, there couldn't have been more than 60, 70 at most, took up the cry.
Kneel, old blood! Kneel, old blood! Kneel, old blood!
Had this happened with the other contestants? I didn't think so. This was special to us, because we were the last match of the day, the star attraction. We knelt, neither of us wanting to be whipped with limber sticks, or worse, shocked by the auras of our captors. Eldon Flight Killer looked like a man at death's door.
One foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel, Uncle Bob would have said.
That was my first thought. The second, close on its heels, was that he wasn't a man at all. He might have been once, but no more. His skin was the color of an unripe Anjou pear. His eyes, blue, huge, wet, each as big as one of my palms, bulged from wrinkled, sagging sockets. His lips were red, somehow feminine, and so loose they sagged. A crown sat askew with a horrid jauntiness on his thin white hair. His purple robe, shot with fine windings of gold, was like a gigantic caftan that covered him all the way down from his bloated neck. And, yes, it was moving, like he was holding a pet underneath. Jaya had said, except it was rising up and subsiding in several different places at once. To my left, on the track, stood Red Molly in a short leather skirt like a kilt. Her thighs were muscular and enormous. Her long knife hung in a scabbard on her right hip. Her orange hair stood up in short spikes, a kind of punk rock do. Wide suspenders held up her skirt and covered part of her otherwise naked breasts. She saw me looking at her and puckered her lips in a kiss. Flight Killer spoke in a clotted voice that sounded nothing like the insectile buzz of the night soldiers. It was as if he were speaking through a throat filled with some viscous liquid.
No, none of the others had been subjected to anything like this, they would have said. The horror of that inhuman voice was indelible.
Who is king of the gray world, formerly empress?
Those in the box and the rest of the spectators responded smartly, shouting it out.
Elden!
Flight Killer was looking down at us with those huge, egg-like eyes. Limber sticks came down on my neck and claws.
Say it!
Kellen buzzed. Elden, we said.
Who brought down both the monarchs of Earth and the monarchs of the air?
Elden!
Petra shouted it with the rest, and louder. Her hand was caressing one of Elden's hanging green jowls. The purple robe rose and fell in half a dozen different places.
Elden,
Claw and I said, not wanting to be swatted again.
Let the match begin.
This was a call that seemed to require no response, except applause and a few cheers. Kellen was between the two of us, just far enough away to keep his aura from touching us.
Stand and face the field, he said.
We did so. I could see Claw from the corner of my eye, on my right. He turned his head to take a quick glance at me, then faced forward. 70 or so yards dead ahead were the weapons of combat. There was something surreal about their careful spacing, like prizes to be won in some homicidal game show. I could see at once that someone, maybe Flight Killer himself, but my money was on the Lord High, had tilted the game in Claw's favor, if not outright rigged it. The wicker basket of stabbing spears, obviously the weapons of choice, was on the right, which was Claw's side. 20 yards to the left was the table with the spike-studded leather gloves. 20 yards further to the left, more or less facing me, was a basket of fighting sticks, useful to clobber with, not so useful when it came to killing. No one told us what came next. No one had to. We were going to sprint to the weapons, and if I wanted a stabber instead of a glove or a bando stick, I'd have to get ahead of Claw, then cross in front of him.
You're faster than you think,
Leah had told me. Only that had been in a dream, and this was real life. You might ask yourself if I was terrified. I was, but I was also drawing from that dark well I'd discovered as a child, when my father seemed bent on honoring the memory of his wife, my mother, by crashing and burning and leaving us homeless. I had hated him for a while, and hated myself for hating. Bad behavior had resulted. Now, I had other things to hate, and no reason to feel bad about it. So, yes, I was terrified, but part of me was also eager. Part of me wanted this. Flight Killer called out in his bubbling, inhuman voice, something else to hate.
Now!
7. We ran. Claw had moved with blinding speed when he attacked I, but that had been a quick burst in an enclosed space. It was 70 yards to the weapons. There was a lot of weight for him to carry, over 300 pounds, and I thought that sprinting full out, I could draw even with him halfway to the spread-out fighting gear. Dream Leah had been right. I was faster than I thought. But I'd still have to cut in front of him, and when I did, I'd be squarely in his slightly reduced field of vision. More dangerous still, my back would be to him. I veered left instead, leaving him an uncontested path to the spears. I hardly glanced at the spiked gloves. Lethal they might be, but to use one, I'd have to get in Claw's stabbing zone, and I'd seen how quick he was when he had an opponent up close. It was the fighting sticks I went for. Over several playtimes, I'd gotten quite handy with them. I grabbed one out of the basket, turned, and saw Claw already charging, the spear held low at his right hip. He swept it up, hoping to open me from balls to belly and end it fast. I stepped back and brought my stick down on his arms, hoping to jolt the spear loose. He cried out in pain and anger, but held on. The audience pattered applause, and I heard a woman, almost certainly Petra, scream,
"Cut off his pizzle and bring it to me!"
Claw charged again, this time with the spear raised high over his shoulder. There was no finesse to him. Like Mike Tyson in the old boxing vids I'd watched with Andy Chan and my father, he was your basic brawler, used to putting his opponents down with a brutal frontal attack. It had always worked for Claw before. It would work now against a much younger opponent. He had the advantage in both weight and reach. According to the dream Leah, I was faster than I thought. I was certainly faster than Claw thought. I stepped aside like a toreador avoiding the charge of a bull and whistled the fighting stick down on his arm just above the elbow. The spear flew from his hands and landed on the grass. The audience gave an "ah" sound. Petra shrieked her displeasure. Claw bent to snatch up his weapon. I brought the fighting stick down on his head, two-handed, using all my strength. The stick shattered in half. Blood jumped from Claw's scalp and began running down his cheeks and neck in freshets. The blow would have laid out any other man, I and Amit included, but Claw only shook his head, picked up the stabbing spear, and faced me. No grin now. He was snarling and red-eyed.
"Come for me, you bitch's child."
"Fuck that. Let me see what you've got. You're as dumb as you are ugly."
I held out what remained of my fighting stick. Now the end facing Claw was a rat's nest of splinters. It was hard wood, and if he ran on those splinters, they wouldn't buckle. They'd punch into his gut, and he knew it. I feinted at him, and when he drew back, circled to his right. He had to turn his head to keep me out of his blind spot. He lunged, and I stuck him in the meat of one forearm, tearing open a flap of skin and sending a stream of blood to the green grass.
"Finish him!"
Petra screamed. I knew her voice now, and hated it. Hated her, hated them all.
"Finish him, you great, ugly hulk!"
Claw charged. I moved to the left this time, backpedaling behind the table with the fighting gloves on it. Claw never slowed. He was breathing in quick, dry rasps. I threw myself to the side, the point of his spear barely missing my neck. Claw hit the table, overturned it, and landed on it, snapping off one of its legs. He held on to the stabbing spear, but that was all right with me. I moved in on his blind spot, jumped on his back, and squeezed his midsection with my thighs as he reared up. I put the remains of my fighting stick against his throat as he lunged to his feet. He clawed at me from behind, whacking my shoulders with his big hands. What followed was an insane piggyback ride. I had my legs locked around his thick waist and my shattered 3 feet of fighting stick digging into his throat. I could feel each attempt he made to swallow. He began making a gurgling sound. At last, with no other option but unconsciousness followed by death, he threw himself on his back, with me beneath him. I was expecting it. What other move did he have left? But it still blew the breath out of me. 300+ pounds will do that. He rocked from side to side, trying to break my grip. I held on, even as black spots began to dance in front of my eyes, and the sounds of the cheering spectators began to sound echoey and far away. The only one that came through clearly was the voice of Flight Killer's consort, like a sharp needle stabbing into my head.
"Get up! Break his grip, you great brute! Get up!"
I might be crushed to death under the great brute, but I was damned if he was going to break my grip. I'd done a lot of push-ups in my cell and a lot of pull-ups on the rope rings. I put those muscles to good use even as my consciousness began to wane. I pulled, pulled, and at last his struggles began to weaken.
With the very last of my strength, I shoved his top half off me and wriggled from beneath his bulk. I crawled across the grass, hair hanging in my eyes, taking in great whooping gusts of air. It seemed I couldn't get enough, or get it down to the bottom of my abused lungs. My first attempt to find my feet failed, and I crawled on, gasping and coughing, sure that fucking Claw, motherfucking Claw, was getting up behind me, and I'd feel the spear going in between my shoulder blades. On my second try, I made it upright, staggered around in a drunken circle, and beheld my opponent. He was also crawling, or trying to. Most of his face was obscured with blood from the head hit I'd given him. What I could see was purple from strangulation.
"Finish!"
Petra screamed. Red spots flushed through her white makeup. She seemed to have changed sides. Not that I wanted her support.
"Finish! Finish!"
The others took it up.
"Finish! Finish! Finish!"
Claw rolled over and looked up at me. If it was mercy he wanted, it wasn't mine to give.
"Finish! Finish! Finish!"
I picked up his spear. He raised one hand and touched the heel of his palm to his forehead.
"My prince."
And brought it down. I'd like to tell you that I came back to my better self at the very end. To say I felt regret, it wouldn't be true. There's a dark well in everyone, I think. And it never goes dry. But you drink from it at your peril. That water is poison. 8. I was made to kneel before Eldon, his bitch, and the other important members of his retinue.
"Well fought. Well fought,"
Eldon said, but in an absent kind of way. He was indeed drooling from the sides of that slack mouth. Some pussy liquid, not tears, oozed from the corners of his huge eyes.
"Bearers. I want my bearers. I'm tired and must rest until dinner."
A quartet of gray men, deformed but brawny, came hurrying down one of the steep aisles, bearing a palanquin with gold trim and purple velvet curtains. I didn't see him get into it, because I was gripped by the hair and pulled to my feet. I'm tall, but Red Molly towered over me. Looking up at her reminded me of looking up at the statue I'd climbed to watch for the monarchs coming home to roost. Her face was pasty and round and flat, like a great pie plate dusted with flour. Her eyes were black.
"Today you fought an enemy,"
she said. Her voice was a basso rumble, far from comforting, but better than the locust buzz of the night soldiers or the liquidity of Eldon's voice.
"Next time, you fight a friend. Should you survive, I'll cut off your pizzle."
She lowered her voice.
"And give it to Petra, to add to her collection."
I'm sure that the hero of an action movie would have managed a smart comeback, but I looked into that wide face and those black eyes and couldn't think of a fucking thing. 9. It was the Lord High himself who escorted me to the team room. I looked back once before stepping into the corridor, just in time to see the palanquin, curtains drawn, swaying up the steep aisle. I presumed Petra, she of the beauty mark, was inside with Flight Killer.
"You surprised me, Charlie,"
Kellen said. Now that the pressure of his duties as the day's master of ceremonies was over, he sounded relaxed, maybe even amused.
"I thought Claw would have your head, quickie-quick. Next time, you'll fight one of your friends. Not Iota, I think, will save him. Perhaps little Jaya. How would you enjoy stopping her heart, as you did Kla's?
I didn't answer, just walked ahead of him down the sloping corridor, keeping as far from his high-voltage aura as possible. When we reached the door, Kellen didn't follow, only closed it behind me. 32 of us had gone to the field. Now there were only 15 to register surprise that it wasn't Kla stepping in, but Charlie, banged up but otherwise unhurt. No, make that only 14. Gully was unconscious. For a moment, they only looked at me. Then 13 of them fell to their knees and put their palms to their foreheads. Doc Freed couldn't kneel, but he gave the salute from where he sat against the wall.
My prince,
Jaya said.
My prince,
the others echoed. I had never been so glad in my life that Empus was a land without closed-circuit TV. 10. We washed off the dirt and the blood. The horror of the day stayed. Eris got Freed's pants down and cleansed the deep wound in his thigh as well as she could. Every now and then, she'd pause in her labor to look at me. They were all looking at me. Finally, because it was creeping me out, I told them to stop. Then they made a business of not looking at me, which was as bad, maybe worse. After 10 or 15 minutes, 4 night soldiers came in. The leader gestured with his limber stick for us to come. There were no greys, so Gully had to be carried. I moved to take his top half, but Amit shouldered me aside, gently.
No. Me and the big boy will do it.
Presumably meaning Iota, since the other big boy was now so much cooling meat.
Help the doctor if you would.
But I wasn't allowed to do that, either. I was, after all, the promised prince. Or so they thought. Hair and eye color a